Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome along to another episode of the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international Johnny Beattie and former France international Benjamin Kayser. It's a show with a bit of a difference today because we'll be back with you again very soon for another episode that will feature all things top 14, European rugby, but we're going to wind the clock back a little bit today. And we've got an absolute legend of French rugby on the show for you. So we'll get him on very shortly. But first of all, how have you guys been? What have you been up to?
So I was commentating for the French TV Exeter Toulouse, the semi-final of Champions Cup. Stunning game, incredible weather. The sun was out. Exeter is a beautiful city. It is absolutely chucking it down where I am now. In French, they have, but you guys, I think you've got the same expression, buckets of water. That's why I realize why England is so green. It doesn't rain. It really feels like somebody's like broken a swimming pool somewhere and it just chucks it down. But at the weekend in Exeter, the sun was out, two fantastic teams that sort of looked like pretty similar to one another, but the most bizarre commentating experience for me, because there was no crowd, obviously. And for the first 5 minutes in the earphones, we didn't have that, you know, that crowd noise, the thing. So for the first 5 minutes, we were literally like on the pitch, and it was super bizarre. Like on kickoff, you can't hear a thing. Obviously, the guys that are outside the 23 will make some noise when there's a good tackle, a try, a penalty, something. But while the game is playing, there's absolutely nothing. It just doesn't seem completely normal to me and it makes it even more weird. But again, like Oyoa Nuge summed it up really well in French press. He said, you get a star, obviously, in France. Do you guys do that in England? Yeah, you do it for Leicester as well. The star will not say COVID under it. It will just be a star, and that will, you know, COVID hopefully will be just the parallel with those, that European campaign will not last for a lifetime, but a crazy game, well deserved victory, and I think we can speak about again how brave and smart hookers are, because Luke Kouandiki playing that penalty 5 meters out just before halftime, I think I saw Baxter from the corner of my eye who was ready to go and punch him, I think. But then they scored. So that sums up that motivation and the belief within the Exeter side that I believe is going to be absolutely key for the final. They backed themselves 400%.
We might touch a little bit on the European final later on because there's some big news coming out of wrestling recently. But Johnny, what have you been up to?
So I was meant to be there with you, Benji, but for BBC Radio, but obviously cannot travel now because of quarantine. So watched it from the couch. Was really impressed again with Exeter. Thought they're phenomenal. I think Baxter probably backs Kouandiki in that situation. Now he knows how good they are from 5 meters out. They're almost unstoppable. Toulouse didn't look like they'd maybe done their homework and couldn't stop them once they got into that red zone, but then not many teams can. Apart from that, what else have I been doing? I was at the opening of the 2023 World Cup train in Dax on Tuesday, which was good fun. It's where I bumped into our guest who's coming on to talk to us shortly. But that's been actually quite quiet. Kids are now back at school, which is great. And enjoying some downtime as it starts to bucket now in the south of France as well.
Well, you mentioned hanging out with our guest the other day, Johnny. So we'll get him on now. And for the first Frenchman we've ever had on the podcast, we've probably got the best one ever.
Beg your pardon.
You're a host, Benji, you don't count. For the first French guest we've had on the podcast, we've possibly got the best one ever. One of the greatest France internationals, one of the best centres ever to play the game, Philippe Sella joins us. How are you?
Very good, and we prepare one game for this weekend with the club. In fact, not me, but the coach, a manager, prepare the game, and we want to see one team playing the greatest rugby, but not sure to win, but because we play against Clermont away. It will be very tough.
A pissed off Clermont team away, for sure.
Can you set the scene for us, Philippe? I mean, you're heading to Clermont this week, but obviously in your role of director of rugby, how hard has the start of the season been for Agen, taking into factor, you know, financially with COVID, everything that's happening, and sporting-wise as well? Last year wasn't the greatest year for Agen. So how hard has the start of the season been for you guys this season?
Yeah, we got a few problems in preparation of the season. For example, there were not a lot of players infected by the COVID, but we got a few. And we lost a few weeks to prepare collectively the season. But we have a lot of hopes. We have one team quite young, but there were a few moves like every year on the club. We got few players with more experience this year. We have one team, one club with less money than another one. And we have to play the best rugby. We have always to find another one players, so young players on the club. We have one good academy. We finished on the last 3 years first and second for the academy. Is something very, very good. But every year we play to try to be a French champion. But for us to win our title is to finish 12. If we are 12, we are French champion. And three years ago, we finished 11. And we consider the club European champion. Really? But yeah. Last year, we were 13 when the championship finished because with the COVID, and the Stade Français was just beyond us because they didn't start well the season. But for us, really, if the season could have been to go to the end, it could have been very difficult to stay in this position. It was something good for us. Sorry about that, but I know the end of the season with all the game we had to play to have been very, very hard for the club.
But just to set the scene, people think of top 14 as Racing, Montpellier, Stade Français, Toulouse, Clermont, like clubs chucking it down with cash. All right, listen, Agen is not like that. Agen has got to build a good, decent budget with young, talented players who are very proud of where they are. So it's really important that sort of the British public understands that that's the reality of French rugby. It's not just, you know, some crazy open checkbooks chucking it down for Kurt Nebile and all those guys. There's also teams who try to build with small budgets, talented players, grassroots sort of rugby, and they do. But on the other side, when COVID hit, and that's more going to be my question for Philippe, they were the only club who announced that apparently there was going to be zero salary reductions and pay cuts. Yep. And the only one. So all the other clubs were trembling and all the players were like, nah, this is a disgrace and this and that. The Agen president came out and said, listen, we don't overpay guys. We know that, yeah, sometimes we can go to second division and we'll come back up. And like Philippe said very humbly, if they finish 12th or 11th, they're European champions, you know? That's the type of team that sort of knows its place and know their role. But bloody hell, they can play some good rugby as well. And the good side to that is that they don't take too much financial risk with their players and with the whole club. And so when something extraordinary like COVID and the pandemic happens, then actually the flip and good side is that they said, no, listen, we pay what we have. We don't invent money. We don't invent a budget. And so actually they said no cuts.
Yeah, but that is, for us, we lost less money than another clubs. we lost more money. But with a club with a higher financial salary, it's more difficult. And as well, the partner and the sponsor keep the contract with the club. Of course, there were a few ones stopped, but the club and discover another one as well. And it was for the sponsor. We got approximately the same money for this season. The club could do that is to keep the same salary for each player, and all the players were really happy to got this decision by the president.
And just before we move on to your playing career, Philippe, we should probably mention that you are obviously Mr. Agen. So just tell us briefly kind of what your role involves on a day-to-day. How much do you work with the first team? How much do you work with the young players?
My role in the club changed a little bit. I was the manager for out of the pitch, and all is one role like I don't know the term in English is a coordinator sportif, and a coordinator sportif is to have one link between the team and the players with inside on the club for the different action mission you can have, and as well the link with outside the different company, or for example for different events we have with the city with the department, the different public relation is to organize as well, and all the pre-season camp or match the friendly game, and the budget as well of the all the season for the when we move when we play away. I change a little bit this year. We create I don't know the term in English. We create one fond de dotation is something
trust fund.
Well, trust fund is to something to help the academy inside the club to help the young player. But as well to help different charity as well around Agen, and to think about how to live better in one city, in one club, in the world as well. Still, I am president of the academy, and for that I keep the relation between the manager, professional Christophe Losuc, and the manager of the academy and the espoir team is Julien Guillard. But we are in one smaller city with 36,000 people. We have with a city around we have 80,000 people. The department. It's 350,000 people. It's less than Bordeaux and Toulouse. It's different than a big city. And we have to work with this.
Philippe, you mentioned that Agen is a small place and it's difficult to compete with some of the other sides. But going back to your playing career, it wasn't always like that, was it? Because when you started off, you came into the first team and you won the French title. So how was it back then? Talk to us about the old times. And also, for people that are listening that may be a bit younger, what was it like in those days? Because obviously the sport was amateur. Was it cigarette smoking in the changing room at halftime, or was it more professional than people think?
No, but the difference in the past, the rugby was amateur. And with the rugby amateur, all the clubs was approximately with the same budget, and the money was not something to have the players and to move the players, because the players there were a few helps, but each player had to work in one job. I was a PE teacher when I started, and I worked for the national education. After I worked for one company called Lee Cooper, like a public relation, and after I create my company. There were different time, and you play rugby for your pleasure, but your pleasure, it was as well in the club when it was amateur. You had to win. And now we are professional. It's a job.
I think I should have mentioned this from the start. This guy is probably the most humble absolute world superstar you will ever meet. Okay, so it's 111 French caps. I think there's only Fabien Pelouse who basically beat him in the French caps in the history of this sport. When he says he created his own company, he created a huge communication company that was pioneer, basically in France and Europe, in all the corporate events that you could have around rugby. Even he said he was playing for Agen. Yes, they won the premiership, and he was definitely the best center in the world at that time and the youngest. So he's trying to sum up things by making them very, very fluid and easy and small. It was absolutely ginormous what he did at the time, what he's done, his whole thing. And then speaking about pioneer, because it's something that a question I always wanted to ask him. He was, I think, probably one of the first Frenchmen to play in the Premiership, going to the Saris. And I wanted to know at that time, how does this happen? Is it an agent? Is it around a bar that you speak to somebody and you go?
The Saris adventure was something just magnificent. And why I play for in England, in North London, why? Is because I met somebody a few years earlier with my company, Cella Communication, and I met in Paris Simon Guillaume. And Simon Guillaume is today president of the Brive Rugby. And Simon Guillaume told me that if I could go to Datchworth, one North London small town, to go to see one team, because his brother was the president of the club. And his brother is a lawyer, president, and I said, yes, of course, you are my friend. We work together for a few things, and it's normal to try to help one small club. And I don't speak very well English, or I speak bad English, but at this moment, I don't speak any word in English. And we spend one day there. I did one training session with them. We spoke after, and I spoke with a newspaper, with a TV. 2 weeks later, Nigel Ray called me, and I met Nigel Ray in London. The first meeting was one nice meeting, and I discovered one guy superb, and today I have always relation as well, communication with him, with his family. And for that, it was the first link with Saracens. I got another contact with Wasps, with Richmond as well, a week later. But with Nigel, there were one special relation for the first relation. And I kept my first meeting with for this move, or supposed move. My first meeting was the good meeting, in fact. And I decided to go because I played always in the same club in France, in Agen. And at the end of the career, I was more than 30. I thought it was one opportunity to try to speak more English, better English, but that's it was not something I reach exactly, but as well to discover rugby in another country, another people, and it was fabulous because I discovered one club and with I think it's about Kieran Bracken and another players like François Piena as well, Michael Lina. There were players from around the world. Imagine one French didn't speak English, and it was quite hard. And with my friend Kieran Bracken, because I drove him a lot between the city, London City, to the North London. And we tried to speak English for me and French for him. Where Le Singe, yeah? Where is the monkey? The monkey is on the tree. Yeah, okay. Where Le Singe dans l'arbre. Where is Brian? Brian is in the kitchen.
Kitchen.
And but it was very good memories about that and another one, of course. What is the story? Why Saracens is a link with somebody I met with my job. And after I spent 1 year and one more, and Nigeria would like I stay one more year, but I was 36 years old and said I wouldn't like to finish with one injury because it's something harder. It's better when we come to stop when we decide, you know. And I finished, in fact, because the first year was quite difficult, where we finished sixth on the table with a series. And the second year, at the end, we were first. And there were one more game to be played. And the game was Harlequins against Newcastle. And Newcastle was second on the table. They won in Newcastle with one great player, 18 years old. I was 36, two players, 2-4-1. It was Johnny Wilkinson was playing number 10 on this team, the fabulous Johnny Wilkinson. And a week later, we won the cup against Wasps. We won the cup. It was the first division title for Saris. I like to speak about that because it's another story, and for my family it was fabulous as well. My son, when he was 3 to 5 years old when we were there, and he was speaking in French, he said, "Je veux pas parler anglais," avec l'accent, with an Asian accent. "Je veux pas parler anglais." Today, he's the best Englishman speaker on the family. He speaks very, very well. And he came back for Saracens on the academy when he was young. Before he stayed 1 year in South Africa, he would like to discover the world as well because he was a young rugby player. And with that, he got one bachelor, one international bachelor. Rugby is fun for that as well because for my family, for the kids, they would like to discover as well the world.
And Philippe, you mentioned you won a trophy there and you did well during your time there in the second year, and some of the players that you played with, other global superstars. So you were part of the start of the Saracens' journey that has led to them winning European Cups and Premiership titles. But you've seen this season with Nigel Ray, who is obviously a friend of yours. It's been a sad time for him this year, and it's been difficult. And he's had to step away from the club. They've had lots of problems with the salary cap.
But you want to ask Philippe now that you heard on the post if they already dodged salary cap 20 years ago? Is that what you want to do?
Did Nigel Ray buy you a house? What do you make of it, Philippe, from the outside? When you look at Saracens now, it's been a sad year for them, hasn't it?
Yeah, Saracens mean something international for me because it was totally different. Agen, 35,000 people, London, million and million people. And I am sad today because I know Nigel Ray is one great person, somebody I have a lot respect for him. He gave and he made a lot for rugby. For one club, he loves and he loved always this club. Saracens, he was his club. He would like to support always in a life. Huh? He was supporting when he was young. And today, we speak about the salary cap, the problem with the salary cap. A few years ago, there were no salary cap, and nobody spoke about the money or the different thing. And he created one club to play on the best. In fact, with the salary cap, I think he thought it was something to help the players as well. And he tried to give for the players a shareholder. And a shareholder, it can be big money or it can be zero money. It can be the both. And for him, it was something to prepare the player for the post rugby. And I know him. And I am very sad because for the club and for him, because he gave a lot for the club, a lot for his person. He was always with the families when there were the club. And after the game, when we could have one dinner, when we play away with the family, with the wife, with everybody, he can offer one night with the dinner. That is the spirit of Nigeria. And if he could see people happy, he was happy. I think you can... I have a small emotion as well when I speak about his men and the family, because we made a lot of things for Saracens club, for his club. And for me... He didn't do one mistake on his mind. For me, he's a superb man and superb manager as well. The Saracens, my son, went to the academy a few years after I was playing there. And he told me a few things. It was just marvelous to say the spirit they can have each other. And a lot of message that he gave me, it was like I discovered years earlier, but stronger.
You touched as well on a couple of players that you played with. You mentioned Michael Lynagh and Francois Pienaar. What was it like arriving at a club at the start of professional rugby and playing with those guys at Saracens?
I played with a legend player, and for me, I knew that Michael Lynagh signed before I signed to Saracens. I knew that. But there is something you want to share on the pitch, your rugby as well, with a player like them and like him. And Francois Pienaar arrived just quite later. He arrived 6 or 5 months later. He's a man... is impressive, no? And to have a share time with them, it was easy. It was too quick, because if I could again spend the time, it could be fine. But with this player today, like in Agen, if they want to come in Agen, they know that they can call me. They are invited. They can stay at home, no problem. But I know as well, if I go to Australia, to Italy, or to London or South Africa, Michael is in London, he's in Italy, he can be in Australia. I will be invited. It was fantastic to have the different players around the world. It was just like a big family. For that, I said he's a one special club, and the result is the consequences.
The way you describe that culture at Saracens when you were there, Philippe, it's obvious that you were at the start of what they've become now, because that's what everyone says who's been at Saracens, whether they've been there for a year or 3 years or 10 years. They all say that the culture there is something special. So it's obvious that you were a part of that right at the start. But we should probably talk a lot about your international career, because we spent a lot of time talking about club rugby for a man who's won 111 caps and has had some incredible moments. And I think Benji would probably want to ask you about, you know, the try from the end of the world in Auckland in 1994, and also Benji in the 95 World Cup. You wanted to ask Philippe about?
Let's start with a sad one. 1995 semi-final against Africa. Abdelatif Benazi. Is it a try? Is it not a try under torrential rain? I think it's the English weather that makes me remind me of this game. But I was born in that generation of the question, you know, is it try? Is it not try? Should have? No. But that's the time where he was absolutely killing it. And then my second question is more because Philippe will not tell you, but he did a tremendously good job as a team manager from the under-20s. And I want to know where, if you compare 1994, I think it's 1994, I think the try in Oakland from 100 meters when they win there. If that's the question I get asked all the time, where is the French flair?
1995, not sure the try was called. I was just behind Abdel Benazi, trying to push him. I am sure he was behind the line, but I don't know if he scored. And Abdel said I scored, but I don't know. Because I was behind him, I could not see the ball, because Abdel is a very, he has a, he's large, no? He's big guy, and the ball is very small. But the end of the game was difficult for the Springbok. We were often on the 22, or I remember as well one move or the one scrum. The ball was played by with number 9. He ran with the ball and he scored one try as well. But the ball, maybe I didn't see and I didn't watch again the game, never. And we were lucky to play one game just a few days later, because we were always thinking about the semifinal, about a few moves, about a few minutes on the game. And because we have to play the third game, the first place of the championship against England, and because we won this game, is like a soulagement. We can come back at home with the job made. No? And because of this game, it was very close. And for me, it's a past. Yeah? For few players, maybe for the manager, they think something wrong on the World Cup, like wrong on the World Cup, or they think something too hard, or they are still thinking there were mistakes on this game. And for me, it's different. I spent two, three days, very difficult, really. I could not sleep, and not because I would like to go to the club to dance, no. Because I was thinking about the try, not try, and the different point on the game and the defeat. And after the third place against England, it was the different. And after the third game, we spent one night with an English player. During the Five Nations, we spent one moment as well. We started, in fact, to have more relationship, and after this game, we spent again one time together, and I remember the two hooker, they were speaking at just 5 centimeters, Gonzalez and the fabulous number 2 hooker from England. Brian Moore, yeah.
Two crazy guys, two completely absolute nutters.
But he didn't speak a lot French, and Jean-Michel Gonzalez didn't speak a lot English. But they spent 2 hours speaking with a few beers and at 5 centimeters. It was one image is fabulous. And that we speak about. All the games between France and England, where they said, well, it was hard enough. And this night was totally the opposite of the game we could have played. And as well, you spoke the
French. Where is French flair? Where is French flair? That's my question.
In fact, the French flair is each one, when he come into the pitch, you have to have the organization. And after, you have one organization when the ball is played on the second move, maybe in a third move. But this try, 94, in New Zealand, is one try that we want to see, because it's just rugby. If you want to play, you can do. If all the players want to play this rugby. But of course, you have to have one fitness on the top, and as well, you have to know what you can do. If you play every from all the of the place on the pitch, if you play always, and you are very tired after 30 minutes, and you cannot analyze, you cannot organize your brain, it will be very bad for the future and for the next minutes. You must know a lot your team, your players, your preparation, your fitness, if you are fit enough, if you or not, or to play one rugby with a lot of flair. For me, the flair is something with as well organized.
I think for everybody that watched the French national team during the 80s and 90s, French flair was what we saw. It's what got us going. It's what we loved watching with the French team. I think the organization that you're talking about has been lacking for a long time with the French team. But now that Fabien Galthié and his coaching team have come in, we saw glimmers of hope and some really positive rugby during the Six Nations. Do you think with Fabien and his coaching team now, we might see the return of a bit more flair rugby from the French national team?
Oui, j'y crois. J'y crois parce que...
En anglais.
En anglais. Ah.
Yes, I believe. I believe on that because when the manager believe on that, all the players can believe on that. Fabien Galthié is well organized, and he give them all the strength to know where to play the move, and to give the best to play the move. He looks that the players are well organized on the pitch. If you want to have the big confidence, to believe on you, to believe on your teammate, all that is on the preparation. And if you arrive to share before the game, but the flair will be much better. If you are afraid, is maybe not the term, but a little bit anxious, it's more difficult to play with a flair.
And Philippe, we've spoken a bit there about France on the field, and it looks like things are getting better with Fabien Galthié, Sean Edwards and the like. But off the field, Benji and Johnny have spoken about it already, and we'll be speaking about it more next week. The elections in French rugby are happening. Bernard Laporte and Mohamed Altred have been taken into custody, they've been questioned. So just, if you can, give us an insight into what on earth is happening off the field in politics in French rugby at the moment.
I read the newspaper, I watch the TV like a lot of people. But we don't know. We follow what happened, and we are waiting to know what they will do in the future. Maybe there is nothing. Maybe there is a few things. But is never good for the image. In fact, but it's not good now because we saw that. But we just have to see at the end what will happen. Today, c'est la présomption d'innocence. Je sais pas comment on dit.
Yes, yeah, so you're free man until proven guilty.
That is more important. And after, there will be one result, and we will see.
Absolutely. And just last of all, Philippe, on a more positive note, we've spoken a lot about some of the amazing moments in your career. Do you have a favorite moment, a favorite game from your career?
It's a harder question of the morning. I will give you two time on the career, in fact, or three time. Firstly, is the first title. In 92, I was 20 years old, my first season. I said, good, it's fine, I can stop rugby. First year, champion. And it was all the games before the final and the final and the big nights and after the title is just magnificent. And as well, the week and the game against Australia in 1987, in the first World Cup, the semi-final. The week before was very, very hard because we won but with difficulties against Fiji before. And the game as well. And 10, 15 minutes after the game over, we were all the players with a few supporters, French supporters, they came in Australia, in the center of the pitch, and we sang different song, Basque song, with Pascal Ondart and other players. And well, we spent 15 minutes. Wow, it was just magnificent. And New Zealand 1994, you spoke about the try, Jean-Luc Sadorny try. This try and this game was just magnificent because it was one game won, and it was the second game won in New Zealand for this tour. That's not happen often. And I think it was in Auckland, Eden Park. There was no national team they won since this game. Well, and that is a good memories about and rugby for me is something I can say a big one thanks because I met a lot of people. But today we can meet the different people and we can share the different adventure games or the different things, and we can discover countries. I tried to play to speak English as well a little bit.
Done well, Philippe, very well. Thank you so much for your time, Philippe, and good luck with Agen for finishing 12th and or 11th and winning the European Cup this year.
World Cup.
Merci beaucoup, Philippe.
Merci à vous tous. Hein. Superbe. Allez, ciao.
À bientôt. Ciao.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Total legend. We didn't even get to ask him about 100 caps. I've just realized.
111.
I know, but the thing about
200, isn't he?
Exactly. Ridiculous. And his generation as well. I think people forget. They only played 4 games a year. There weren't summer tours. There weren't autumn tests. There was the 5 nations where you played 4 test matches and that was it often. So the fact that he was the first guy to do it, he played for so long and he was a freak. He was an absolute freak.
When did he say once anything about himself?
Nothing.
He's talking about Michael Lynagh, about François Pienaar, about he's got 111 caps. You ask any British player at that time, he was by a mile the best center in the world. He was doing things that nobody ever has ever done. He thinks I've got more titles than him. What the hell is he talking about? I mean, look, he's done and won everything. He was part of a French team that dominated European rugby in the Six Nations. If they didn't win it, then they would basically be second to something. I never won the Six Nations or anything. And he's still trying to compare. He's just, and he's kind, he's relaxed, he's super open-minded. I'm telling you, if you push on him on Nigel Ray, he will shed a tear. That's really the type of guy that
he
is.
He was close, eh?
Yeah, he's close. That's who he is. That's what he loves for. I was fortunate enough to do a speaking gig with him before the Wales-France game, the last Six Nations that we won in the millennium. I'm telling you, he was in tears after the game because he was just so happy about finally seeing the boys being relieved of the massive victory, and that stadium is really precious. But then he was singing with all the Welsh. Oh, I love the Welsh. They're so nice. They're so kind. They love to sing. They're just so kind. You know, he likes kindness, people, traveling. Like he's saying thank you to Agen. Agen, bend over. He's got a statue in the middle of the village. They're the ones saying thank you. He's saying thank you to rugby. He's inspired. I don't know, millions of people to watch, play, love, and fall in love with rugby over the years. We should be saying thank you. You know, it's just that type of dudes. And you don't meet a lot of them, to be fair, like that. You meet a lot of guys that will explain to you how things should be done, explain to you how they would have done better. He's just a legend of a bloke, and I've only got admiration for him.
And Benji, you asked him about the French flair and where it's gone, and how he was renowned for flair and that team he played in, the tries they scored. We went through all that. But sometimes, I mean, people don't forget, but I suppose if you've only watched highlights or you haven't watched too much of him during his playing days, he was hard in defense, wasn't he? He was hard as anything.
He was one of the only centers. He was roughly 100 Ks for one. He was like 98 Ks or something like that. So he was the first solid sort of athlete that could play in the center. To be totally honest, he could have played professional rugby now.
Yeah.
He is that good, that fit. That much of a freak. He was ahead of and over than anybody else. But he had pace and he had the flair. He was just incredible. I mean, look at his highlights when he's 20 and he wins the first title with Agen, then he went straight to the French team. I was like, who is this freak? He was running through people, running around them, and with class. He just had class. He had this thing where everything's fluid. He made things look easy and fluid and beautiful. And he was a tough bugger, don't get me wrong.
He was way ahead of his time. There's also a really good story that came out of Agen. There's a boy called Luke Hamilton that played there. He was a Welsh kid. And I'm not sure if you'd seen this story, but I thought I'd say it. It's just really short. But Luke Hamilton said, look, I saw Philippe, as president, come into change rooms before the game. And he went to shake my hand, or what I thought he was going to do was shake my hand. And he sort of brought me in closely, gestured, said, come here. And he headbutted him straight in the face. And that's how he got Luke up for his first game in Agen. He nutted him straight in the face. So the old school is still there. He was an absolute specimen and a freak when he played, but he still got it. And that was what Luke said afterwards. He just learned to keep his head down around Philippe, work hard and do well for the team. It was all about the team, but he's a legend.
He could have moved to Paris, to London, to wherever, just to build up his businesses. And he's talking about Michael Lina, you know, being in Italy and Australia. He could be precisely doing the same thing. He decided to go back to Agen, which is a tiny little place, basically stuck between Dordogne and Toulouse and Bordeaux, let's say. But which is clearly, like he said, 35,000 people. They're in top 14. And he's dedicated his life to that. And then he comes in the change room and he didn't headbutt to split in half. He was just like a motivational headbutt, if you know what I mean. A gentle little headbutt. But that's how committed and how much he cares and wants to give back to his club. That's him.
Amazing to have Philippe on. And we will be coming back with another podcast very soon. So we will discuss all things top 14 then. But there is a bit of news coming out that we should probably just touch on, which affects the top 14. It's affected the fixtures the weekend just gone. It will also maybe affect the European Cup final. Even if it isn't because it's going to be postponed, it will certainly affect Racing's preparations for it. So it's been reported that they've had 9 positive tests for coronavirus.
It's super hard to say. For 10 months, we need to be extremely thorough. It's very easy to say in 3 weeks, we've got the first Champions Cup, well, not the first, the third Champions Cup final in the last 5 years to play, and then they will go into lockdown. That's what I think will happen. And that's why they canceled the game against La Rochelle. They don't care. Push as many top 14 as you want games in 2021. Listen, they've got one target. They will lock everybody in, and it's easy to actually get them to commit to that. So I'm actually pretty... very relaxed to the fact that they will just assess them every single day if needed, lock everybody in, get a 30-man squad maybe, and get them like to stay at home completely or whatever, or to isolate in the training center. But I don't see it being a problem for the final.
But it's going to affect their preparation, isn't it? Because the final is on the 17th of October. I don't know how much preparation they're going to have. And, you know, I know Finn will come up with a magic ball or whatever, but it's going to affect the way that they train in the lead up to that final, isn't it?
It is, 100%. Ultimately, you need it to go ahead. That is the key point. Like, we've already seen Cass, they've been knocked out of their competition because of the rules. Like, you could not have, or it wouldn't sit well with a hollow victory and a cancellation of a final and Exeter walking away with a star on their jersey without having played the game. So firstly, you have to get the fixture played. Like, it didn't sit well with me what happened with Cast. Yes, you had to get the quarters and semis done to get to a final, but now at this final point, like, you need to see a game played. I mean, that's just fundamental. Each French team is doing as much as they can to get all their fixtures played. The Racing boys will be desperate to get this game to go ahead, and they will want to win more than anything. And like Benji said, they will do everything as a club. It doesn't matter if they don't see their family now for 2 weeks, they will be gone. I think they just, you know, they lock down, get in a bubble together, make sure their preparation is right, because this is the one chance they're going to get this year, and then it's gone. So they get one shot at this and one bite of this cherry, and it needs to be the spectacle that everyone wants. Although there's not going to be a crowd there, it has to be the spectacle and the final that everyone's been waiting for.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. A massive thank you to Philippe Sellat. And thanks to all of you for listening and watching as well. We're on YouTube, on all good podcast platforms, and get in touch with us on Twitter, Instagram as well. Drop us a question, a message, leave us a review, and we'll be back with another episode very soon.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.